Hello, this is Graham Wilson. We thought it might be of interest to our network of partners if we were to try to follow progress at this year's COP in Marrakesh by recording short voice blogs, generally every evening. The conference runs from tomorrow, the 7th, to the 18th of November. We may not have much to report on some evenings, but we will try to keep you up to date. To begin with, I thought I'd try and set the scene and along the way explain a few of the terms and acronyms that are used, because I'm aware that some of us are not approaching this event from a climate perspective, and perhaps also for the first time. The annual COP conferences are the formal meetings of the UNFCCC parties. COP stands for Conference of the Parties, and the first of these events took place in 1995 in Berlin. Overall, their aim is to assess progress in dealing with climate change. The UNFCCC is short for United Nations Framework Convention for Climate Change. The UNFCCC is an international environmental treaty which was negotiated at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro in 1992 and came into force in 1994. The parties in COP are the countries that have ratified this treaty, and to date that's 197. The UNFCCC aims to stabilise greenhouse gas concentrations in the atmosphere at a level that would prevent dangerous, what is known as anthropogenic, interference with the climate system. In other words, human-manufactured interference. The framework itself sets no binding limits on emissions and has no means of enforcing them, but instead it outlines how specific international treaties, which are called protocols or agreements, can be negotiated to do so. In most cases, the negotiation process prior to and at the annual COP produces a document that each country then has to take back and have ratified. When enough countries have done so, it reaches a tipping point and it comes into force. There have been several milestones along this journey. In 1997, the Kyoto Protocol established legally binding obligations for developed countries to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions by the period 2008-2012. Incidentally, the only country to refuse to accept the Kyoto Protocol was the United States, although Canada also withdrew from it in 2012. Obviously, different countries are going to be able to make different contributions. Since the Bali Action Plan, which was adopted in 2007, all developed country parties have agreed to quantified objectives for limiting and reducing their emissions. They do this by means of mitigation and, increasingly, adaptation. And the agreement that they reached in Bali also ensured that their efforts would be comparable. Developing country parties agreed to nationally appropriate mitigation actions, known as NAMAs, in a context not of adaptation, but of sustainable development. It's accepted that they require support in the form of technology, financing, and capacity building. The 2010 Cancun agreements stated that future global warming should be limited to below 2 degrees Celsius relative to the pre-industrial level. In 2011, the Durban Platform for Enhanced Action was adopted. As part of that, the agreement that was reached between the parties was to a legal instrument that would be enforceable. The Doha Amendment, which was made to the Kyoto Protocol in 2012, aimed to extend that protocol for the period from 2013 to 2020, but that hasn't yet entered into force. This is because, as well as the United States and Canada, although they took part in the first round, New Zealand, Japan, and Russia wouldn't agree to the second round of targets. At both Durban and Doha, it was agreed that current efforts to hold global warming down to below 2 degrees Celsius relative to the pre-industrial level was going to be inadequate. More action was needed, and yet several of the key countries were refusing to take part. So COP20 in Lima in 2014 was essentially about the negotiation of a universal climate change agreement. This work, coupled with extensive behind-the-scenes negotiation, led to the extraordinary outcome in Paris at the 2015 COP, when 196 countries adopted the Paris Agreement, aimed at limiting the rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius. The Paris Agreement was to be signed in 2016 and enter into force when it was ratified by 55 countries, which would represent over 55% of greenhouse gas emissions. Eventually, on the 5th of October this year, this milestone threshold was achieved. And so now, the Paris Agreement is in force. So we enter COP22 in Marrakesh with an enforceable agreement that each country will find ways of achieving a specific reduction in emissions that will help us globally to reduce the rise that we have created to 1.5 degrees Celsius. To my mind then, Marrakesh is about three key things. Will the nationally determined contributions be achievable? Will they be adequate to result in the maximum 1.5 degrees Celsius temperature rise? And probably most importantly, how are they going to be financed? Because this is not something which is going to be achieved by individual governments. It is going to have to be supported from the private sector. More news tomorrow evening. Thank you very much for listening. If you've got any thoughts or any feedback on my summary or any of the other contributions that we make over the next couple of weeks, please make sure to leave them on our blog, and we will be following up everything that's written. Thanks. Bye.